Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Hope your morning is off to a fantastic start. Hope you're getting ready to have a great day. Good morning, LZ. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Travis. I am doing extremely well. After I got done with work, I was able to make it over to my local Home Depot to pick up some cheap plants. Okay. The kind of cheap plants that look good for like 2 weeks and then die, but you don't care because you got 2 weeks in which
and you spend like $40.
But, you know, I got them set up a little bit on my deck. You know, you've been out here. So now it looks a little bit more like spring, summer. It looks alive.
Nice.
For 2 weeks.
Nice.
Until I forget to water them and then they all die.
You had to add a little color back there after your barbecue grill went, your cover at least went flying off your balcony into the street.
Oh, my God. I still think about that sitting on my couch. Just sitting on my couch high as hell. Completely unable to save my cover before it flies over the balcony.
Yeah, that's not
so ridiculous. How was your day?
I'm great. I'm good. I did not get back to a restaurant yet, but I'm planning on perhaps doing it again tonight.
Taco Tuesday.
I'm back. Maybe Taco Tuesday would be a good way to do it.
Lunch truck.
We'll see. Lunch truck. All of the above. I might do all of it. The only thing I might eat at home today is the coffee I'm staring at right now. I'm in a good mood right now, but I just finished, you know, you and I and Raj, we were just having a conversation a minute ago talking about Major League Baseball, trying to get restarted here. I was watching a little of the Korean baseball game that was on TV before Get Up came on here a few minutes ago, and Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez and Jeff Passan were having a conversation about whether or not the league is going to restart, and nobody seems particularly bullish on the return of Major League Baseball. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, but now we're into this part where a 48-game schedule seems like the next landing spot. You know, we had 100, and then we were down to 80, and now we're down to 48, at least as far as potential proposals go. And let's put the economics aside, because the economics are genuinely intricate to try to understand it, that the owners are trying to spin it 100 different ways. They want to play less than a prorated version of the salaries. The baseball players are saying, we'll play as many games as you want as long as we're getting a prorated version of our salary. And then they get into percentages and everything else and whatever. I don't care. Figure it out. A 48-game season is a really bad idea because baseball is the sport that's played over the course of 6 months, that's played over the course of literally 162 games. And almost never do you get a team over the course of 162 games that isn't legitimately good. That you, if you are the best team in your division or one of the best remaining teams in a wild card spot, you're a pretty good team over 162. We've seen it constantly where a 50-game sample, bad teams play well for 50 games. Bad teams can win more than they lose over 50 games. The Pittsburgh Pirates were in first place at the All-Star break last year. They were not a particularly good team, but over 50 games, they would have been in the postseason. I know we've talked about asterisks in the NBA and all these other leagues because of the goofy formats that we're going to play in moving forward for this season, for the shortened version of the playoffs or the resumption of the regular season. You can't have a 48-game Major League Baseball season and not have it carry an asterisk the size of a boulder, because that's not how baseball goes.
No, it is not. And, you know, as you said, weird things can happen. The most dominant team in the postseason last year would have been out of the postseason, actually below 500 even, if the season was only 48 games and Washington Nationals would have been on the outside looking in. So, no, you don't want to see things like this happen to baseball. And I know we want to see this sport. I know we want the Dodgers to win. I know we want to see Mookie Betts and Dodger Blue. I know all of these things, but also know history. And ain't no damn body going to respect a champion after a 48-game season in baseball. That's a non-championship. That's a non-celebrated moment in time. It would be much better for the team that wins to just not have a season than to try to defend itself against playing less than 30%, somewhere between 25 and 30% of a season, and then a postseason kicks in. That's an embarrassment. That is counterproductive. Because it keeps the stain of the coronavirus very present. Well, why'd you guys only play 48 games? Well, you know, the pandemic. Nothing gets scrubbed away by 48 games. The only thing you do is put another asterisk to happen when a World Series champion is to go along with the Houston asterisks.
Well, I mean, think about a team like the Minnesota Twins, who are not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. They hit a bunch of home runs. There's a scenario where a team like that has three great weeks. You figure you're going to play in 3 weeks, you probably play 22 or 23 yeah. games. You go through it and right. you just stack it, right? You get white hot coming right out of it. You hit a bunch of home runs and you win that division. You go in and you end up winning the World Series. Like you said, LZ, the Nationals last year were a bad team for about 2 months. They just weren't very right. good at all. And then they caught fire and they end up winning the World Series. There's no question that the Nationals were I mean, they won the World Series, so they're the best team in baseball, but they were certainly one of the best teams in baseball by the end of the season. There was no question about that. And then they get hot and they go through it, and that's the way that it happens. You could have the Dodgers. The exact opposite could happen too, right? Let's say you get off to a slow start. Let's say it takes Mookie Betts half a minute to get used to the National League. Let's say that Cody Bellinger gets off to a slow start, that Max Muncy gets off to a slow start, Clayton Kershaw can't quite find his groove. Let's say you have an injury to one of these players over 48 games. If you miss 10 of them, I mean, that's practically 20% of the season. I mean, so all of a sudden yeah. you have all of these weird results going into a postseason where we already know it's a crapshoot to begin with in baseball, but at least once the crapshoot starts at the end of a regular season, we've got the right 10 teams in the crapshoot. Now you could take the 10 teams in the crapshoot, and five of them could be teams that wouldn't be there in a million years. You're just completely diluting the purpose of having this in the first place. I know that the owners want their money. I know that the players want their money. Everyone else has figured out a way to do this. I know you don't have a salary cap and that's why you guys are still arguing over dollars and cents. I understand what's going on. I just don't care. You need to figure out a way where you guys can both live with each other for the short term over an 80-game season, a 90-game season, a 100-game season, or whatever it is, and figure it out. Because the more we read about this, the more we hear about this, the more I'm convinced than I have ever been that a missed season would be catastrophic for Major League Baseball.
A missed season would be catastrophic, but a 48-game season, to me, is equally catastrophic. Because you play a season no one respects. You play a season that no one cares about. Except if the Dodgers go 48, no, I'm riding a dime for that. I will ride a dime.
Yeah, that would
undefeated
count.
48, no.
That would count.
If we are undefeated and win the World Series, I'm taking the asterisks and I'm throwing it in the trash. That was real. But generally, barring a 48-0 season, no one's going to respect it. No one. You're not going to go into the Hall of Fame based on that ring. No one's going to sit there and consider whether or not they're going to vote for you and you're on the edge and they see that, well, they want a ring in a 48-game season that puts them over the top. No one's going to value it like that.
I think there's one scenario where it would have value. And it's basically what you just described. That, look, hopefully it's the Dodgers. But if anybody could go through a 48-game season and put together a 39-9 record and then go through the playoffs and only lose a small handful of games, then you say, okay, look, clearly they were the best team. Now, people that know baseball would be arguing, look, I don't care what you do over 50 games. You have to do it over triple that amount, right? A regular season is more than triple the time of 50 games. So I don't, you know, great, good for you. You had a good third of a season. How many times in baseball, more than any other sport, have we seen players or sports or teams look remarkable over a month or even maybe a couple of months? And then at the end of the season, you're like, hey, remember when the Twins were good? Hey, remember when the A's had that 2 month season or that 2 month stretch where they won 60% of their games and they still finished in last place? It happens all the time. So you better run the table. You better run through the playoffs with only a handful of losses. Then maybe you could look at yourself and say, look, nobody touched us for 2+ months. But anything short of that, it looks ridiculous.
It does. It certainly does. I'm like you, Travis, in the sense of it's infuriating that we're having this conversation about 48 damn games. When everyone else seems to have been able to figure it out. Like, literally, your season was the season that we were getting ready to crank up and start.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, you've had more time than any of the other leagues to prepare for this at this moment. if you think about it, like if you think about the draft and how the league had to scramble for the draft in the NFL, obviously the rug gets put underneath the NBA. But you're baseball. You're in spring training. You see this thing coming down the tunnel. It's getting closer. It's getting closer. It arrives. And here we are now, 3 months later, and you literally have no traction on your plan. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Like, you could see the pandemic. You could see the buildup to it. Are you trying to tell me you had no discussions until the season, until Rudy Gobert's diagnosis?
Right. I mean, look.
I saw Indian Wells put out plan after plan after plan before ultimately having to cancel, and that was in March.
The reason that baseball would tell you that they can't get this together is because neither side trusts the other. That unlike the NBA and unlike some other places, there is no trust between labor and management. Fine. I will concede that you guys hate each other's guts and you believe that if the one side told you that tomorrow's Wednesday, the other side is going to check. I get it. You hate each other. Fine. At the end of the day, here's what I don't get. A prorated portion of the salary is not an unreasonable request by the players. Okay. It is also not unreasonable for the owners to say, we understand what you're saying, but our income is far less than a full prorated version. If the stadiums were full, we'd pay you a prorated version. Here is what we make on a game day. Here is what we're losing with nobody in the stands. Here is the gap between those two numbers. Can we work out a solution in that gap? That seems like a reasonable position for both sides to take, and yet no one wants to get to that point and show, here's the books, here are the numbers, here's what you are in, quote unquote, entitled to. Let's figure it out. This does not, I'm not an economist, but that doesn't sound super difficult to me.
No, it's not super difficult, but you have to have people willing, to your point, to negotiate with each other in good faith. And that requires trust. And the trust has been broken for a number of years now, and they haven't figured out the right combination of commissioner and union president to reconnect. And here you are in a critical moment when the pressure's coming and everyone else has figured it out.
Nothing. Everyone absolutely else, nowhere.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
All right. We'll continue to try to get a solution for Major League Baseball. Plus, no one in an official capacity said his name over the weekend, but could we see Colin Kaepernick coming back to the NFL? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. LZ, just to put the finishing touches on our conversation about how silly a 48-game Major League Baseball season might be, that's the equivalent, and these aren't perfect translations, but that's about a 24-game NBA season. That's about a 5-game NFL season. So, yes, it's a bad idea. Think about if we're going to have a 5-game NFL season and then say, okay, let's start the playoffs. Let's get ready for the Super Bowl. We saw you guys play for a month. Let's kick this thing off. It's so stupid.
It's so bad. And as I said before, the worst part of it is that, you know, say you play a regular scheduled playoff schedule, right? So that's the same as any other season. But because the regular season undermines all of that, even if you did everything right in the postseason, no one still will respect it. No one's going to respect a Super Bowl champion who went 3-2. You know what I'm saying? With 3-2, won your division, and then you won a Super Bowl. No one's respecting that.
I don't know, guys. I think this would give baseball something that it never has in a regular season, something we've all criticized for it, and some reason why we don't pay attention to their regular season. It would give a sense of urgency. It never has.
Okay, that's a really good point. But here's
thank you. I'm gonna ding myself for that.
Yeah, well, who doesn't? So
get offline.
That you're right, Raj. It would create a sense of urgency, and now all of a sudden, that Wednesday night game between the Dodgers and Padres is important because that might be the reason that you advance or you don't advance. I get that. But what makes baseball baseball is that you have to build in some sense of cushion for just the random silliness of this game. That Cody Bellinger, who's one of the best players in the league, could go a week and get three hits. It could happen. It happens all the time. Mike Trout, who might be the greatest player any of us have ever seen, could have a week where he can't do anything right, over the course of 6 months, that stuff balances its stuff out. That stuff tends to take care of itself. Over a short sample, you just wouldn't have it. And I'm sitting there going, look, I'm out of the playoffs because Cody Bellinger had a bad week? Really? That's why I'm out? It's the base, that's not baseball. That's flipping coins. That's just hoping that you get lucky along the way and get the right teams. You're not getting the 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 best teams in the playoffs. You're getting a random mathematical anomaly that just kind of throws itself in there because the coin came up heads 7 out of 10 times in a short sample. That's what you would get.
But you know what's funny? Listening to you talk about that example, that's exactly what has happened to the Dodgers in the postseason. A bad stretch at the wrong time.
Exactly. So, but at least they're in the playoffs. At least they got themselves in there to have a legitimate sample, to have the coin come up the way it did during the regular season, and you win a World Series like that. But you can't get into the tournament if you just got lucky for a month.
No, that part of it is absolutely true. I just, I care less about the ramifications of a hot start versus a cold start as much as the end product at the end of the day not being respected. And if champions aren't respected in the season, then why did you even play the season? You know, if you know going into the postseason that no matter what happens, no one's ultimately going to care. No matter what happens, this actually doesn't benefit your career, your legacy. This almost does absolutely nothing, like an exhibition championship. It's like winning the preseason trophy or the summer league trophy in the NBA. Like, no one truly cares about that. So if that's going to be the end result going into it, then I would rather not do it at all.
You know what I just thought of, Wilson?
Yeah.
Your Lions might go 3-2 and win the Super Bowl under this scenario.
Oh, what is that?
Lions do get off to good starts. This is their strength.
Actually, you know what? Now that you brought that up, let's do this then. Let's go ahead.
Absolutely.
I didn't know. Now so, I found newfound respect for what the Lions are going to accomplish now.
You mentioned it yesterday, LZ. Roger Goodell's statement that he issued before the weekend was far better than anything we've heard out of the league since we started talking about these issues. It certainly went at least a long way towards apologizing to people that have protested, but there was never a specific mention of Colin Kaepernick. Now we're having another conversation right now about whether or not Colin Kaepernick will be back to the NFL. One of his former teammates, Carlos Hyde, he says that he would like to see Colin Kaepernick back in the NFL.
I think the NFL needs to start by signing Cap back. I think if they sign Cap back, that'll show that they're really trying to move in a different direction, because Cap was making a statement 4 years ago about what's going on in today's world. The NFL didn't bother to listen to him then. So I think they should start by doing that.
Okay, so we know that he was not in the league because he couldn't play. We know that's not true. He's, by all accounts, in pretty good shape. We seem to have gotten to a point where we're more willing, the league, but the we, and this is the league, willing to listen to people that have something to say. Does Colin Kaepernick find his way back into the league?
Well, I think it's a question of which owner. Right? Which owner is ready to look his constituents, his fan base in the face and say, this guy helps us win. And damn who tweets what, damn what the Confederate flag waivers may say, this guy helps us win. That needs to be number one, because what you can't have happen is it look as if he's a charity case. He's not a charity case. He's a talented quarterback that you blackballed. And allowing him to do his job is not charity. You're not doing a good deed by employing someone who's one of the best at what he does. What you're doing is just stop being an ass and you know, smiting your face. Mm-hmm. What you can do is say, you know what? I'm the New England Patriots. Tom Brady has left. Let me look at our depth chart. Could I use a guy like Colin Kaepernick? The answer is yes. That's what you want. What you don't want is, well, we kind of screwed up and Let's give him a chance. Let's bring him back in so we can congratulate ourselves. We can pat ourselves on the back because we've done a good deed. No, I don't want that garbage. I don't want that BS. He deserves to be in the football as a starting quarterback at least because he's talented enough. And they took that from him.
LZ, it's interesting because I agree with everything you said, but we're in a weird spot when it comes to quarterback. Cam Newton is waiting for a job. And no one's arguing Cam Newton's credentials. And I know that Cam Newton has some injury questions that are at least unanswered at this point because teams can't physically see him and get with him and decide whether or not he's ready to go. But Cam Newton was looking for work for a long time, and he hasn't found it. I agree. You don't want to give Colin Kaepernick a job just so you can say, oh, look, we've seen the light. Come on in, Colin Kaepernick. Here's a job. Hey, we're sorry about all that stuff. Welcome back into the league. I'm with you on that. But the opportunities may not be there right now. And what I mean by that is, let's say the season starts. Let's say guys start to drop. Let's say guys start to play bad. Because we know that there are not 32 quarterbacks in this league that are better than Colin Kaepernick. There's certainly not 64 of them that are better than Colin Kaepernick. So maybe this has to shake itself out a little bit. So not Cam Newton and Kaepernick and all these guys that we know are capable of playing, the opportunities. So you mentioned New England. That's one of the few that's obvious right in front of your face of where there might be a vacancy.
Well, I mentioned New England more so because of the ownership than with the opportunities. He can be brought on to any team to be a backup. No problem. Give him a full camp. He'll be ready to rock and roll the whole nine. No problem. But you got to have an ownership group that has enough guts to want to take that heat, initial heat, because it's not going to be long. It's not going to be a long heat, but initial heat from a few people. You got to be willing to do that. I would argue that Mr. Kraft is in that position to do that. I don't know if the Hunt family is in a position to do that or not. I don't know. I don't know how they feel about this topic in particular, nor their stomach for these sort of, you know, conversations. I don't know. But what I do know is this, that if he's able to come back into the football league, National Football League, it's not because it's a charity case. It's because he's a 32, 33-year-old quarterback that has been to a Super Bowl that at one point was playing like the best quarterback in the league. Mm-hmm. That's what I do know. And if you just go on credentials alone, if there was space to welcome back Michael Vick after a long layoff, and he was not at one point considered the best QB in the league, he was considered the most exciting but not the best, then there certainly is room to have a conversation about Colin Kaepernick coming back, who did not commit any crimes.
We will get Field Yates' thoughts on this. He joins us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, as promised, we are joined right now by ESPN NFL insider Field Yates joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Field, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I am doing well. Hope the same to you and yours. And hopefully we're creeping a little bit closer to some sports being back in our lives.
Everything but baseball, it sounds like, Field. It sounds like we're going to get just about everything but Major League Baseball.
We're going to play six games. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So, Field, let's get right to it. Do you think that we may see a 2020 NFL season that includes Colin Kaepernick?
I think it's possible now, and I would have said no 6 months ago, or at the beginning of the offseason. And, you know, I feel like people within the league maybe viewed it as a ship that had sailed, and I think the past 3 weeks has probably, or 2.5 weeks, has sparked the conversation and helped maybe reignite some of the passion that NFL executives needed to see and feel to potentially revisit Colin Kaepernick and his prospects of being back in the NFL. Obviously, there was a workout towards the end of last season that nine NFL teams were originally scheduled to be there, and then all of a sudden the events did not go off quite as planned, and I feel like that effort was not necessarily done in vain, but it didn't amount to what I think Colin probably hoped it would have, and maybe something like that could be revisited and help perhaps get the ball rolling again for him to possibly land a job in the NFL for the 2020 season.
Well, I was, from my perspective anyway, that workout that was playing in Georgia was garbage from the very beginning. It was haphazard, was thrown together very quickly, and I don't know whether that was done for legal reasons. Speaking of legal reasons, do you feel that the NFL and Roger Goodell are legally bound not to mention his name in public because of something with their settlement? Or was that just more ridiculous, misstep calculus not saying his name during that apology?
Yeah, so LZ, by the way, I would agree with you. There were a lot of errors in the way of that workout. I thought you're right, haphazard, hastily put together. It felt like something that was done for the sake of getting it done, as opposed to trying to achieve what a workout for all 32 teams and one player should be intended for, which is to help that player showcase his skills and make teams seriously consider signing him either in that moment or at some point in the future. So in terms of Roger Goodell and not mentioning Colin Kaepernick by name, I'm with you. I don't know the answer to that. And I don't want to speculate just because I don't want to create, stir the pot in a way that's unfair to either side. It was interesting. I thought the response to that video was somewhat interesting on Friday night. It dropped around 6:40 Eastern time. And obviously the pandemic makes sort of the idea of a Friday news dump a little bit different. I thought a lot of people felt like it was a massive step forward. And my own personal perception, was that it was a good first step, but I don't think that it represented a wholesale shifting of mindset by the NFL collectively. I thought it was, again, a good first step, but I'd like to see this turn into, more than just words, right? I think ultimately what the NFL needs to be concerned about and prioritizing is actions. That's what really matters, and that will be what defines whether the NFL has actually made progress.
Yeah, Field, with that in mind, and we're talking with Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider, that's been my question all along, and LZ and Key and I have been talking about this a lot, is the statement that we saw on Friday, and maybe the answer is we don't know yet because some time needs to come off the clock, but is it a change of heart where they said, you know what, we had this wrong, we need to do better, and we need to do differently moving forward, or is this just the heat is turned up all the way, everybody is getting pressure to issue a statement, and the NFL decided that we're going to make it look right as opposed to have it be right? Do we have an answer to that yet?
We don't have an answer to it, but you know something, guys, and this is something I think I've felt and expressed previously, and I think it maybe applies here again, is that the NFL has the standing and the capacity, given the popularity of the league, its presence and its importance, it has Sunday sort of locked down during the fall, right? The NFL has a chance to be a leader. And, one thing that I feel like has been a theme in recent issues that transcend the football field is that the NFL has been more reactionary, far more reactionary than it has been a leader out in front, right? So this would be an example of it, right? The NFL could have been a leader. They could have been at the forefront of helping to end police brutality. Maybe not end it, but at least advance the message about the importance of mitigating police brutality and social justice issues. I felt this way when the NFL was dealing with an unfortunate slew of domestic violence incidents. And the NFL said it was going to be a leader. And then it felt like it fell short again to me. So I wish the NFL, and again, I admire steps that are taken. I don't want to say that it's not important to take steps, but I always sort of look at this and say, we can't let the NFL off the hook and say, job well done because you did something, after the issue was brought to light. Like, let's help squash, and I don't want to mean end or squash entirely, but let's help make some progress with these issues before they've kind of reached a crescendo or reached a boiling point or reached a really nasty and sort of, and sad and crazy state that we are in right now. So I wish the NFL would just be a little bit more progressive because I do think it's it's got the influence to maybe make some real change.
Do they care about being a leader in this capacity? Is there an example you can think of in which they were the lead for something that didn't financially benefit them directly? Because I'm trying to think, because for the NBA, I can think of a couple of moments. You know, the biggest moment for me personally anyway was Magic Johnson and the conversations surrounding HIV/AIDS. Totally changed in large part because the NBA got behind Magic and put his efforts behind Magic. Is there an example like that in football?
It's been a while that I can pinpoint something specifically, LZ. I'm with you. I don't have a good example that comes to mind right away that I'd say that I think sort of fits the criteria that you are examining right now. And that, so we can, by the way, acknowledge that, like, the NFL has done a lot of good in a lot of ways. It's just that what we are specifically referring to is where the NFL has sort of been a leader on something that, maybe did not benefit the bottom line. And I understand that businesses have to often operate with the bottom line in mind. Sadly, the pandemic hasn't sort of reinforced to us or reminded us just how important the bottom line can be, because ultimately survival can be called into question when circumstances hit you adversely. But yeah, I don't have a specific example in mind, and maybe that sort of answers the question. We need more of the NFL being out in front. And it's not their only responsibility, but I do think that it is a responsibility of individuals or groups or organizations with power and influence to do a small part and not ignore the bottom line entirely, but to do things that might be much more important than, you know, revenue or, you know, overall growth year over year, and might make a real impact that's lasting and lasting way longer than anybody who's currently in power or currently part of the NFL will be around on this earth.
Field Yates joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. And, you know, Field, we all kind of are anxiously waiting to see what the return of the NBA looks like. What does the play look like under that format? The NFL has a little bit longer runway in that they don't start until September, obviously. Do you expect the football at the beginning of the season to look like the football we've seen at the beginning of other seasons? Or because coaches haven't been able to get with their players for the better part of a couple of months, and we'll see when they're allowed back into the facility, the players, that is, full-time moving forward. But is the NFL going to look the most normal, for lack of a better phrase, than of all the other sports we're going to see return to play in the next couple of months?
Yeah, I think it's possible, and here's the reason why, is football in September in normal years is not always pretty, and when that happens, a lot of us say things like, well, you know, NFL teams are hardly playing their starters in the preseason, the first month of the regular season is basically the real preseason, so I think there's a chance that it looks pretty comparable to how it has in previous years. You know, the NBA and the NHL, which were obviously mid-season, and I guess and the MLB for that matter. I don't want to say they're compromised with their restarts, but you know, the NBA, it's not like when July 31st runs around or comes around, it's going to be following this this full normal lead up of a training camp. Whereas in the NFL, I think what we're going to end up seeing is that if training camps start a little bit late, the season might start a little bit behind them as well, right? We're not going to have a 2-week period where the NFL just says, all right, you're back, and we get rolling. So I think there's a chance that this will look the most like it normally does at the beginning of the season, as opposed to where the NBA or the NHL or the MLB could be when their leagues begin. And hopefully baseball's restart is not 2021, but some point later on this summer.
Phil, are the Rams going to win a Super Bowl? It's a yes or no question.
Short answer is no. Not this year.
All right, thank you, Phil. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you later.
I'm probably never allowed back on the show after saying that, right?
We'll give you some time to think about it for next time, Field. You can come up with a better answer next time. Join us. Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. Field, thanks for your time. Appreciate it a great deal.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. LZ's top 10 is back, and it is coming up next. All right, LZ, the top 10 for a Tuesday is?
Well, my friend, we are in a very interesting moment in time in America, obviously, if not the globe. And as we are trying to put into words what this moment means and how we feel about it. And as the state is opening back up, we find ourselves back in our cars and occasionally still back in traffic. So this is my top 10 list of songs you want to be playing at this moment in time. Okay. Top 10 songs you want to be playing right now, this moment in time.
Because we woke.
Coming in at number 10. Because we woke now. We were sleeping. Some of us were napping. Some of us were in a coma, Raj.
Hey.
We woke now. Coming in at number 10 is a woman who needs no introduction. Actually, a man who needs no introduction. It's Freedom, Beyonce, Kendrick Lamar. Now, I will admit, I have played this song in my car. I get into the car, chill. I play this song. I come out the car. I'm ready to do some stuff. I'm ready to fight. I'm fired up. I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. Number 9, we're going to take it back a few decades. This guy is on the list more than once. Mm. But we're going to start with Bob Marley and Peter Tosh's Get Up, Stand Up.
Ooh.
You know, Bob Marley, that is so interesting, is that because the vibe is so chill, and because the perception of life in Jamaica is so chill, and because of the prevalence of the marijuanas, people think that every song that he ever sang was about partying and chilling and loving each other.
A lot of angry songs, LZ. His best music was when he was mad.
A lot of angry songs. Best songs. I didn't include War, but trust when I say that. See, that you don't want to be playing that song in the car because you might really do something. So I try to make this thread the needle.
And if you really listen to the lyrics of Get Up, Stand Up, you realize that people he offending. We don't want to say it, but you know, he's like, oh, okay, he going in with y'all four stone that country. Yeah.
Yeah. Why y'all over there dancing, talking about I love Jamaica? Number 8, Childish Gambino, This Is America. I mean, to think that when you go back and look at that video, and how groundbreaking it was. And remember, it had the imagery of Dylan Hood going into that church and shooting it up while they're in the midst of prayer service and Bible study. And we thought, oh my God, something has to be done. Something has to be done. And then here we are again in 2020 and nothing has changed. Like, I think that is the point when I think about this particular song in this video, is that it captured a moment that was so horrific, you thought that was going to be the moment, and it wasn't. That's why it's so critical that we don't lose this moment, so in another few years, we don't have another moment like this. Amen. Number 7, Marvin Gaye was trying to tell you what's going on, but y'all wasn't listening.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been listening to this entire album a lot lately, as I'm sure a lot of people are. And one of the reasons why this has been such a frustrating element in society is because we keep telling you this is on. What's going on is from the 70s. And he laid it out like a script. This is what's happening. This is how parties impacting us. This is police brutality. This is this. In the 70s, and he had a nice little groove to it so you can dance to be educated, and we're still here. And I really like what's going on just because from an instrumentation aspect, but I don't know how you feel about this, Raj, as a musician. I just think from a musicology perspective, it's such a perfect album.
Oh, it is. And this is when he kind of broke away from the traditional Motown sound and this and that and just came out with his own type of thing. He went up in the woods and just was out there by himself, and he came up with a new sound, and the message was on point.
LZ, like you said, it's such a pretty song. It's such a good song that the message almost is secondary because you're just kind of, your head's going, you know, bobbing up and down. You're enjoying the music. You're not listening to what he's saying, I think, is part of the reason.
Yeah, very much like a lot of Bob Marley songs.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, The Revolution Would Not Be Televised.
Ooh.
Now, trust people, I've already tested all of these songs, and yes, they still sound good in the car. I know that, because sometimes, Travis, you can play a song that's real old, and you realize, that didn't really hold up the way I thought it did. This one actually does. This one holds up. It sounds good in the car as you're driving still. The revolution will not be televised.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, let's fight the power.
Get down.
Bounce to the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, because I know you got soul, brothers and sisters. Listen to them, listen now. Another song that was a big crossover hit, had a lot of white Americans amped up and hyped up and fighting the power, but it didn't take root.
Right.
It didn't take hold.
Unless you're an Elvis or John Wayne fan, you weren't happy.
They're like, yay, fight the power. They thought it was like a happy song about fighting parents or something like that.
Don't do your homework.
He told you about your stamps and everything. Travis, he tried to tell y'all.
He tried to tell you.
Oh, man.
Number four, another Marvin Gaye song straight off the album, What's Going On. This one's actually probably my favorite Marvin Gaye song of all time, which is really saying something because he's got some bangers. But Inner City Blues, to me, is just a perfect song. Travis?
Yes?
When I tell you there's no song that's better to smoke to at this moment.
Okay.
The Inner City Blues. I've easily killed two joints myself just listening to this song on repeat.
That seems aggressive. That seems like too much. Well, what do I know?
Well, I was in the space.
Yeah, I
was trying to work through some stuff.
I understand.
But, I mean, the bass line is banging. The lyrics are incredible. His voice and delivery is perfection. And, again, it's just another song that just really holds up and stands the test of time, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. Good thing because it's such a perfectly put together composed song. Bad thing, obviously, because the things that made him want to holler in the 70s are making me want to holler in 2020. Mm-hmm. Number three, Bob Marley's last song, Redemption Song. I'm going to forgive Jorge for playing a live version after we discussed on our text. Not too.
It's all right.
It's a good live version. It's a good live version.
So way to go, Jorge.
It's a beautifully composed song. You know, as I said, it was the last single before he died of cancer. But when he asked, you know, this line right here, you know, they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look. That's the part of this conversation, guys, that gets lost. It isn't simply about the pain and anguish of seeing black and brown bodies slain when they're unarmed by police officers. It's that these people, these men and women, we don't know all what they were getting ready to contribute. Bob Marley called them prophets in Redemption Song, but we don't know what Tamir Rice might have grown up to have become and all that potential. You know, for his community, for the world. You know, flip it and say, what happened if Tamir Rice was actually Dr. King and all that was lost because of an unarmed cop that was not behaving in the way that you would have liked him to behave or her to behave? That's what we're talking about here. Not just the pain of the moment, but the loss of the future. Number two, A Change Is Gonna Come, Sam Cooke. There's a soundtrack of the 60s. Sam Cooke allegedly was arrested trying to get into a hotel, and he ended up doing this song in response to the segregation and the oppression and the racism, and another song that just kind of holds up. Now, I know I've gone hard with a lot of revolutionary songs, but the number one song I want people to listen to during this time is a song that Stevie Wonder wrote for one of his greatest double albums of all time. It's the opening track. It's called Love's in Need of Love Today. It's important that we remember to feed the love. It's really easy to feed into the hate, but he opened Songs in the Key of Life with this song, with this particular song, because he wanted to set people in the right mindset. So as we're fighting the power, as we're pushing each other to end racism, to fight racism, to get Colin Kaepernick back into the league, what have you, don't forget to feed the love. Love needs to be fed as well. I've been listening to this song a lot, too. I hope you tune into it. Love's in Need of Love Today and every day.
Fantastic top 10, LZ. All right. Major League Baseball is trying to get its act together. They're trying to find a way to put together a schedule, and the latest idea is a terrible idea. We'll explain next in the morning show on 710 ESPN.